It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Live from the 6th and Peabody Studio and across the OutKick Network, this is OutKick 360 with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Out of the gates and ready to go, OutKick 360 is underway from 6th and Peabody with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine with Chad Withrow. I'm Jonathan Hutton. Paul Kuharski will check in an hour from Buffalo. Bills and Titans tonight. On Monday Night Football, one of two games. We also get Vikings-Eagles. We'll preview both throughout today's show. And again, PK joins us in an hour, live from the stadium, with the very latest on tonight's national matchup. What a weekend of college and NFL games. We're going to recap all of the greatness in all of its glory. Chad, good afternoon.
Is Paul's face covered in buffalo sauce right now or something? Is he getting chicken wings? Why an hour?
Well, I think that's when he has access to the stadium. Based on when he can get in and actually be on the show.
Gotcha.
That makes total sense.
Hutton, I am thrilled to be here today because we had a glorious Sunday of NFL football. I thought week one, even though we had some close games, lacked a little bit of drama in some of them. This week did not lack for anything in the NFL. We are all blessed to be football fans and have watched Sunday in the NFL yesterday. Terrific.
Miami over Baltimore takes the cake. And then you have Arizona on life support, where at halftime, I was listening to Cardinals radio on my drive to do some TV work. And they're discussing, one of the announcers caught themselves by saying, what can a coaching change? And then he stops and goes, what can a coaching adjustment do in the second half to get them back in the game? Almost like, I don't want to be insinuating that Cliff Kingsbury's on the hot seat. They're down 20-0. And they come back to win in overtime on a defensive fumble takeaway return for a touchdown. We had that. We're going to hit on Dolphins and their comeback win, down 21 going into the fourth quarter, and Tua and Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle going off against that Ravens defense after Lamar Jackson was playing well. The Jets down 30-17, come back and win by a point because of clock mismanagement.
Sorry, Tyler.
Or over the Browns. And everything in between was phenomenal. Great college football weekend, too. Appy State continues their Cinderella run. Penn State trounces Auburn and sends Tigers fans headed to the exits before the fourth quarter even gets going. A&M rebounds with a nice win over Miami, a good defensive performance against a solid quarterback in Van Dyke. And LSU gets a much-needed win at home. It's Tennessee-Florida week now after the Gators survive South Florida and the Vols take care of Akron. There's a lot to get to over the next 24 to 48 hours.
And how about my Kansas Jayhawks? 3-0.
Great pick.
Lance Leipold. They go to Houston and win. Been telling the Husker fans in my life, you could do a lot worse than hiring Lance Leipold from Kansas to lead the Nebraska Cornhuskers. What a great start. Guy's a program builder. He's gotten it done at every level, everywhere he's coached. And he's got Kansas playing good football. Really fun weekend. Hutton, though, I'm watching Kyler Murray yesterday and the Cardinals, and I still can't help but think, every single offensive play seems like they snap the ball to him, and maybe there's one read, but I can't really tell. It's like they snap it, and it's a scramble drill immediately. And he's really good at that. I mean, he is an expert at doing that.
He's a magician.
I feel like they're not running a set, organized play, going back to the Cliff Kingsbury discussion at times. They snap it. He takes off scrambling and then eventually does some miraculous escape act and then throws it toward someone at some point in the play.
Well,
happens a lot with that offense.
I think that's by design. I also think you're seeing some of the remnants of Hopkins not being available for their offense. With a true number one guy, they're now trying to, you know, it's either Murray or bust. Murray comes out and the game plan's perfect, or we see what happens from week one and going back to the playoffs of last year against the Rams where the game plan didn't work. He either avoids pressure. I mean, he held the football for 20 seconds on the two-point conversion where he runs around like 80-plus yards and ends up scoring on the two-point conversion. And they went on long drives. They scored touchdowns of 9 plays, 11 plays, 18 plays over the final two quarters. And none of that takes place without Murray's magic. I mean, he's a trick show. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I think that's the maddening part about it. Yesterday in the second half, they stayed in the locker room very late. It's already a short halftime to begin with, the Cardinals. And the team, the Raiders were back out on the field. Everyone's ready to go. It's like less than a minute before they're starting the second half. And the team was still in the locker room. Coaches were out. It seems as though there was like a players-only chat down 20-0 on the road in Vegas after an abysmal offensive performance the last two games they had played, week one and then the playoffs of last year. And they came back out and pulled off a miraculous comeback to send the Raiders to 0-2.
I look at yesterday, and I think about three AFC teams that should be in contention for playoff spots and three things that absolutely cannot happen. The Raiders cannot blow a 20-0 lead against Arizona at home. Cannot do it. It was great of the Cardinals. Great comeback, all of that. Cincinnati cannot lose to Cooper Rush and the Dallas Cowboys to drop to 0-2. Can't do it. Cannot have it, and that's what happened. We're going to focus on, because that's the biggest story of these games, the positive out of these games of these teams. But on the flip side of that, you cannot have this. You know what else you can't have? You can't blow a 28-7 lead at home if you're Baltimore. Tua Tagovailoa had one of the best performances in Dolphins history. And they had a guy named Dan Marino as their quarterback. That's how good his day was. But you cannot allow that to happen, up 28-7 at one point in that game. Up 35-21 also in the second half.
Well, again, they went in the fourth quarter down by three touchdowns. Ravens.
Yeah.
Down by three touchdowns. Tua with 429 yards, throws for 6 touchdowns. Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, they totaled 354 yards and 3 touchdowns in this game. The Ravens tried everything defensively. They dropped 9. They blitzed him from the middle. They brought extra pressure from the edge. Nothing worked. And the Dolphins sit at 2-0, getting set to host the Bills, who played tonight, hosting the Titans in Buffalo.
Yeah, it's look, great for those teams. But watching those, I mean, those are collapses. And look, Tua put the ball on the money. Tyreek Hill is very fast. We knew that going in. Can't let guys get wide open behind you. And I think the most concern I have for a team in these three games may be Cincinnati and their loss now and their 0-2 start on the season. I'd say the Raiders also showing some cracks at 0-2. But the Ravens are going to be fine, I think, in the long run.
Me too.
Well, I mean, and then of these surprising 2-0 teams, who are we buying? I'm starting to believe a little bit in your guy, Hutton, Mike McDaniel, and the Dolphins. And Tua may just end up having a great season.
Well, they're going to be the talk of the NFL this week, and there will be plenty of buzz around that game anyway as they get set to host Buffalo in the AFC East. But they have the chance to take a 2-0 division lead over their AFC East opponents. That's huge. And they come from behind, and they win a game where you know, they're on the ropes. They're getting blown out. Tua threw 2 picks early. You know, there's always going to be suggestions of, is it on the quarterback? Is it not? But the suggestion that he's unable to throw deep and they're unable to hit the big play, what Miami's doing, it's very difficult to cover them because of their speed. And everything that Tyreek Hill has talked about all offseason with Tua putting it on the money, we saw that yesterday where, I mean, I think in past instances, the expectation of Tua Tagovailoa would be that he's going to miss on 1 or 2 of those big plays, or he's going to leave a layup just a bit short off the rim, and they're not going to get or maximize as much off of a play where there was more yardage to gain. That was not the case yesterday against a sound Ravens secondary. And strong overall plan initially by Baltimore. And it's not like Lamar Jackson turned it over either. I mean, he was rushing and throwing yesterday for big yardage. That was a phenomenal game. That's one of those that is you take out and you put in contention for game of the year.
No, it was great. And
Baltimore drove down and got the field goal from Justin Tucker, the long one.
Yeah.
that was money that put them up by three, and Tua still went right down the field.
In that first, the when they're down 35-21, I think, maybe, or maybe 30, they were down a lot. But the first touchdown that got them going from Tua, where he has that little spin move,
yeah,
when the rush is coming in, and to keep his bearings and his balance and just put it on the money for the touchdown. Very impressed with him. Very impressed with the offense from Miami yesterday. Tyreek Hill has been better in Miami than he was in Kansas City, you know, through two games so far. So got to be pumped if you're a Dolphins fan.
Well, and Kansas City's not showing signs of letting up without him. I think where they'll end up missing him the most is postseason play when you've got to have a play. But the Dolphins yesterday, just to put in perspective of how rare it is for what we saw, they're just the fifth team since 1950 to trail by 21 points entering the fourth quarter on the road to come back and win a game. And they do it in dramatic fashion where they find Waddle in the end zone. Tremendous job. I love what Mike McDaniel said post-game, where he told his team on Saturday night that he hoped that they would go into Baltimore and face some adversity because he wanted to see how his team would respond because he thought they were built to withstand whatever they were going to throw early. And they did. I think it's a huge confidence boost, Jad, for a team that has a young first-time play caller, is looking for some energy from their quarterback, and the energy comes from their wide receiving core. We should also throw out, though, Chase Edmonds in their run game also came to play yesterday. And that's an element that Tua hasn't had either, is a serviceable running back. Through two games, it looks like Chase Edmonds is their bell cow, 70% carries.
Well, surprising 2-0 team in the Dolphins, surprising 2-0 team with the New York Football Giants. Brian Daboll, Mike McDaniel, both selling hope to their team. But it's one thing to sell hope and say, hey, this is a new attitude. You know, we got a new outlook on life. Things are going to be better. You're a pretty good football team. We're going to make this happen. You sell those things and you don't have early success, it's a much more difficult sales pitch. When you start out 2-0, in the way those two teams, I mean, just Dolphins that we're talking about now, you beat Bill Belichick and the Patriots, the team that's had the stranglehold on your own division for years now in game one. Then you go on the road, and even on a day where Lamar Jackson plays really well, you beat the Ravens, who's a team that's, you know, perennial playoff-type team. To do that, to go to 2-0, phenomenal. And the Giants also, game two was one that you could see them winning when the schedule came out, at home against Carolina. But to win on the road against the Titans, the defending number one seed out of the AFC, and then to beat Carolina at home, remarkable start for them as well. So that's the bright side of some of the NFL finals. Some surprising 0-2s out there as well. And also, we've got a suspension coming down before the show from Mike Evans, who will now be suspended one game for that fracas against the Saints yesterday.
I'm a bit surprised that it's just one game.
Me too.
Because of the history that he and Marshon Lattimore had. Evans has already been suspended a game for going after Marshon Lattimore on the sideline. Back whenever Jameis Winston was the quarterback of Tampa Bay, he was jawing with Marshon Lattimore, and that's the scene where Evans comes up and just plows him with a huge shove in the back from behind, and then there was a brawl, maybe a large term for it, but he was thrown out of that game too, suspended for a game. This is the third time they've had an incident on the field, and because of that, I was like, man, this... Initially, in real time, you're watching, you're like, they're playing this up like they've just been ejected and this is like a first-time, one-time thing. This is like three times now where there has been a physical altercation after the play coming off a bench and doing something. So I'm surprised it's only one game. It is a big game, though. Tampa hosts Green Bay this coming Sunday afternoon on Fox. It's like a 3:25 kickoff in Tampa. It's the Buccaneers' first home game. They come in at 2-0, another 2-0 team, facing a Green Bay team coming off their first win last night on Sunday Night Football over Chicago. It's a big loss for them because outside of Mike Evans, I don't know if there's, you could throw Godwin in there, others. I don't know if there's a more dynamic player that does something a bit different than everyone else other than maybe like Scotty Miller, who's that short-range, intermediate-route gadget guy. No knock on Scotty Miller, but their go-to player is Mike Evans. And Brady lost him yesterday. They had a lot of injuries at wide receiver yesterday. And they still, awful game through three quarters, go on the road in New Orleans and win that game 20-10, and it wasn't even that close in the fourth quarter.
Well, the defense came up big for Tampa. You know, the two fourth quarter interceptions by Dean were huge. Brady, I mean, the Saints own him up until this game, and really they still own him defensively in this game. At some point, you got to just stop talking back, I think, because this is part of the Saints' game. I understand that, you know, tempers can flare and this and that, but Brady's tossing tablets on the sideline every time, and I'm watching a lot of that game. Every time someone says anything to him, he is getting right back up in their face over and over and over again. Not something you see from a lot of quarterbacks, and it's not me saying, oh, how dare he say a curse word back to a player or anything like that. We know Brady's edge a bit, but I'm watching and thinking, I don't see how this is benefiting you. Because through 2.5 quarters, you had no offense going. They're taking great delight in shutting you down the way they have.
I think he plays better when he's fired up like that.
And then they're getting your – but he didn't play well yesterday.
Yeah, but every time – even when he's struggling, that is like the second or third time where he's had that little – that small passing yardage, which is like 230, and then had the offensive drives and or lack thereof. And every time that he plays that way – it's only happened twice or maybe three times. They've won.
Yeah, that what
he
happened
finds
was
a way to win those
Marshawn
games.
Lattimore pissed off the Tampa defense, and the defense won the game for Tampa. I feel like watching that fight, that was the turning point in the game. Lattimore looks like an idiot, too, because he will never shut up.
They still went on a long drive after that, a long touchdown drive, where you felt like the first team to get a touchdown, it was insurmountable for how that game was going. And right after that's when I went on the long touchdown drive and got it in the end zone. I'm with you, though. Like, the Saints, they have a remedy for him. That's a big win for Tampa because they're down and depleted, and they still found a way against a solid defense to go get points.
Well, and Jameis Winston twice in Tampa territory throws interceptions.
I don't know what they're doing playing him. They announced before the game he's playing with four fractures in his vertebrae. No matter the situation, four back fractures, to me, it's time to rest the guy. You got Andy Dalton there. Like, there's some issues there where they're still playing him. I think it speaks volumes of what they're trying to just hope and pray for in New Orleans offensively. With four fractures, and they announced that before the game. Crazy.
Yeah.
How about the Colts, by the way? The Colts. So let me put this. If you didn't know, I've been preaching this all offseason. If you didn't know Frank Reich was on the hot seat and every move they were making with their front office and with their coach has to do with job security and how peculiar it was that they were not addressing some of the offensive weapons other than Matt Ryan getting there, which is a huge win for them, trading Wentz away to get Ryan. If you didn't know they were on the hot seat, you do now. Because all of this offseason, they've done nothing but talk about two teams, the Titans, who win the division, and the Jags, who kept them out of the playoffs, and a team they haven't won on the road against in years. It's been since 2014 that the Colts went on the road and beat the lowly Jacksonville Jaguars in Jacksonville. And to talk about all offseason, where they come off of a game in Houston, they had really no business tying the game, and they get a tie, not a loss. And to have the game circled in week two, where you're going back on the road against a team and a franchise that kept you out of the playoffs, knowing how awful you were the last time you played there, literally the second game that mattered from when you're playing now, and to go not just lose the game, get shut out offensively.
Got whipped.
That, to me, is a signal that it is a sinking ship, and right now they're another loss away from abandoned ship. That's how bad this could be in Indy, because heads are going to roll. I don't think the owner can withstand more mediocrity based on how they've been talking all offseason, how much Ballard's been preaching about addressing some of the wrongs that they're trying to get right, and then Frank Reich getting absolutely destroyed in his game plan by the Jacksonville defensive play callers and defensive system. It was awful. And again, Chad, to not only lose the game, but to get shut out 24-0, to me, that's all you need to know about Indy this year, sitting at 0-1-1. And the fact that they started 0-3 a year ago, to go at the end of the regular season, have a chance to get in the playoffs just by beating either the Raiders or the Jags, and they couldn't do it, and then to start this year the way they have, Frank Reich's going to be unemployed soon.
Well, coming into the season, there was no doubt about it. You know, it was Titans or Colts at the top of that division by everyone's pick. Not a single person that I saw pick Jacksonville or Houston to win that division. The Colts have now played the bottom two teams in the AFC South, and they are 0-1-1 with two road opportunities against those two teams. It's a horrific start. Hutton, you like to say it's not if you lose, it's how you lose. They didn't lose by a last-second field goal. They got curb stomped by Jacksonville in every facet of the game. And for Frank Reich to come out and say, it's not an effort deal, it's not an effort problem, we just got badly outplayed and outcoached in this game, that's also unacceptable. I watched this game, and I immediately went from, will Frank Reich lose his job, to not if, but when. And is it going to happen midseason with Frank Reich? Because the Colts are just bad right now.
It may not even
they
take
are
to mid-season.
A bad football team.
It honestly may not take until midseason if they continue this. Also, I mean, it's not – let's go a step further. Doug Peterson ran laps offensively against that Indy defense. It goes all the way around. Time of possession midway through the third quarter was like 30 minutes to 15 minutes. And at that time, it was 24-0 already. It was 24-0, first downs. Jacksonville had 20. Indy had 4. And I made note of this because anything after that moment, I felt like was going to be garbage time, where Jacksonville sits back and allows a lot of yardage to take place, and maybe they get a touchdown. Indy wasn't even that good yesterday. Awful. And with the expectations that they have and all the hype and buzz nationally behind them, to be as lifeless as we saw in that game, to me, there's, you know, they're another loss or so away, Chad, from not coming back from it.
Yeah, when I say midseason, that's just a blanket term to mean the season.
Anytime.
I'm not saying the halfway point. I'm saying, this is not going to be a Black Monday firing. I feel like it's one or the two, and right now I'm leaning towards it's going to be in the middle of the season at some point.
It's their third shutout in 15 years, Jacksonville's defense. They haven't won since 2014 there, the Colts. Their last four games, and Frank Reich after the game said, you know, this is one game. No, it's not. Last four games at home, you lose to the Raiders with an interim coach, I think because of a COVID deal or whatever. They lost to Jacksonville, which knocked them out of the playoffs. They tie against the Texans, which, hands down, if we did a poll across any fan base or any media outlet, among the five worst teams in the league, we would put right there, from organizational structure on down to talent. Young talent, but again, no one's expecting them to contend for much. And then they're shut out by the Jags, that have every reason not to win that game. To Indy. Craziness. I learned more about the team yesterday that lost that game, the Colts. Although Jacksonville can be one of those surprise teams, just like we're talking about with the Giants. Hit us up on Twitter at Outkick360.
We're just getting warmed up, Hutton.
Coming up, let's dive into college football headlines. Penn State, the Nittany Lions, James Franklin, they go on the road. They head to the Plains. And then the Auburn fan base heads for the exits before the fourth quarter gets going. We'll do that. We'll discuss App State. We'll discuss the week that's coming up for Tennessee, Florida, and much more across the SEC. That's all straight ahead on Outkick 360.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're recapping another fantastic week of football from college to pro. Outkick 360 rolls on across the Outkick network. What we learned across the college football landscape that we'll discuss now: Penn State blows out Auburn. You have A&M winning a big game against Miami. LSU takes out Mississippi State. App State continues their Cinderella run with the Hail Mary tip touchdown at the end to beat Troy after game day was there. Arkansas survives Bobby Petrino.
Oh, can you imagine? I'm watching that game in the second half when Missouri State's up, and I'm looking at the Arkansas people, and I'm thinking, I cannot think of a more cruel fate than the man who had to leave your program because he totaled his motorcycle with his mistress, who was paid by the university, on the back of it, comes back and beats you with Missouri State when you are a top 10 in the nation program. But luckily for Hog fans everywhere, they're still calling the Hogs today because they survived Petrino and Missouri State. Dude can coach football. There's no doubt about that. He is a great offensive mind. He had some play calls in that game that I'm marveling at how well they worked. But that was near disaster for Arkansas.
No big changes at the top of the AP Top 25. You'll take a look at it here. Georgia dominates South Carolina. I look at Georgia, I think, man, they're better. They're a more complete team than they were a year ago, which is saying something. Washington wins at home over Michigan State. So we see the Huskies pop up to 18th overall. Oregon won over BYU as the more physical team. They're back up to 15th. And just with all of the other headlines, Herm Edwards is out at Arizona State. So we did have, for the second consecutive week, a Power 5 head coach on the outs.
A little competition for Nebraska and their coaching search now that Arizona State's got a vacancy also. 20-point favorite against Eastern Michigan. You lose. You start 1-2. You compound that with the fact that you're being investigated by the NCAA for major violations, and it became a pretty easy decision for Arizona State to go ahead and turn the page from Herm Edwards. It was not as compelling a Saturday as it was on Sunday across college football, but there was still some good action. I thought Penn State was very impressive.
Me too.
In their just physical beatdown of Auburn. Look, I understand that Auburn's got all sorts of issues. And Brian Harsin, I think it's cemented now. He's going to be done as Auburn coach at some point this year. We knew that going in, that he had to almost be perfect to keep his job. But man, oh man, I'm impressed with James Franklin's squad after that game.
Well, the game, if you just look at a stat sheet, is not even that close because Auburn had the 83-yard drive at the end of the game. They had the 63- or 65-yard touchdown drive that padded some stats late. This is a blowout, 41-12. And we previewed this by saying this is one of those games where no one's expecting big things from Auburn based on Brian Harsin's situation, where even if to us, Chad, and I'll speak for you here, even if Auburn does well, Harsin wants out based on the vibe around the program and everything that went and took place back in February and March.
He's a guy now waiting for a buyout, I feel like.
Yeah, and if you thought he was surviving the season, I think this loss is a precursor to what's coming down the road here. But point being, this is a big win for James Franklin and the Nittany Lions to go on the road and beat Auburn, a team that was a back-and-forth game and a solid game a year ago at your own in Happy Valley. Now you get a road win in the SEC, albeit an Auburn team that's struggling, that has awful quarterback play, that can't string together much of anything in consistent fashion that you would point to as solid football. And to go on the road and play your game, play your style, have Clifford play and take down their best player, Tank Bigsby, non-factor against Penn State. I thought that signaled great things ahead for Penn State this season by getting the road win on the SEC.
Yeah, Bigsby, 9 carries, 39 yards. The rushing attack is what impressed me. 245 to 119.
Singleton, the
on
freshman.
On the road at Auburn for a Big Ten team to just really enforce their will against Auburn, I thought was really impressive. Through 3 weeks, I'm very confident in saying Auburn looks like the worst team in the SEC West. So I think that they've got an ugly record coming their way this year.
But honestly, if we're being fair here, when's the last time a Big Ten team not named Ohio State or Michigan has taken the will, that a team has gone on the road and broke down the will of the opponent in the SEC? I don't think that happens.
Well, first off, these games don't happen that often because the two conferences hate each other.
So they never
schedule each other.
Or
so
it's neutral. Or it's a postseason game.
Yeah, you got to go to all those bowl Outback and Citrus and all those games that it's Big Ten versus SEC. And I'm sure you can find some games there where the Big Ten has dominated on the ground. But regardless of precedent, when you think SEC, you think big, bad defensive line play.
Trenches.
And what I saw from Penn State was they were bigger and badder than Auburn in this game, and that's a testament to James Franklin and his program and what they're doing right now at Penn State. 3-0 on the season. Purdue loses to Syracuse. Syracuse, by the way, now 3-0. That win over Purdue, excuse me, maybe doesn't look quite as impressive for Penn State, but regardless, this Saturday was really impressive for the Nittany Lions.
A nice win for A&M, 17-9 over Miami, where Miami was trying to press the issue, and for whatever reason in the second half where not much was going, they elect to kick a field goal to make it 17-6 instead of go for it down 17-3. I don't know what was up there. I would have tried to get that close to the end zone in this game. I try to punch it in there. The teams combined, though, for less than 700 total yards of offense. I mean, this was a slugfest. But, knowing that Van Dyke comes in with all the hype and they have some offensive firepower, plus the transfer running back from Ole Miss. Chad, knowing what App State did to their defense a week ago, I was impressed by what we saw and how they rallied the troops a week later to get a win at home over Miami and keep their season alive. Because back-to-back losses at home against Appalachian State and Miami does them in.
Yeah, Billy Lucci said, it wasn't going to save the season getting a win, but losing would have ruined it. So they survive in this game. But watching A&M, this is just who they are now. They don't have a good offense.
Yeah.
I didn't see any real cohesion from the offense. Max Johnson's better than Haynes King. I'm not sure how much.
He's
such a difference maker on special teams, too. He had the kickoff return for a touchdown against Appalachian State. He's their true – Ania Smith should be, but their passing game is so out of sorts, it's hard to get him involved to any great extent. So A-Chain is the difference maker with the ball in his hands.
But they're not treating him like the bell cow that I thought they would and that they talked about.
Their offense is just not well organized or cohesive. And that is a Jimbo Fisher problem. Sure, the quarterbacks aren't great. I thought Max Johnson, he's going to be better than Haynes King coming out of this game, but that's just a bad offense. They got a good defense. They got to hope to win games like this. This is a very much a 1989 SEC-type team that they're going to win in the trenches, and they're not going to do much offensively.
They have, going back to your point on offense, they have role players, but they don't have the leading actor, right? They've got the B-level star with Smith and A-Chain, because I think both are could elevate to be the guy, but they don't treat either guy like the guy of the offense, the go-to player, and which is odd in the SEC, where you have caliber. I mean, they're true top-flight caliber athletes and players. I would expect them to lean more into both of those guys than what they
do. This is totally on Jimbo Fisher to me. I'm not blaming any player for Texas A&M. He's got the talent. He's got the best freshman class in the history of the sport. He's got some big-time receivers they could put out there, some of which are getting suspended, I know, from this game. That's not a good sign for A&M, but this is his offense, and it's bad. The offense he's put on the field, this is not an execution issue. They don't look like they can run a play at times.
The longest play of the game, looking at it, 29 yards is their longest offensive play.
It's discombobulated when you watch them play. From the offensive line to every layer of the offense, the timing's a little bit off. Their protection is off. The quarterback is off. The playmakers you mentioned, Hutton, aren't getting the ball enough. And even when they target those playmakers, something's just a little bit off. It's totally an offensive issue now, and that falls at the feet of Jimbo Fisher.
Ania Smith, the best play he made was recovering his own fumble and somehow coming up with that on the special teams issue.
Now, defensively, I thought they were outstanding, and I think they have a chance to be outstanding.
Yeah,
they're going to be, I think I looked today, they're a 2.5-point favorite over Arkansas on a neutral site. So Vegas still believes in A&M's talent. That's a neutral site game against the 10th-ranked team in America in Arkansas, and A&M is a slight favorite.
Yeah, 2.5 points, I think. Yeah. Right now, early on, I like Arkansas.
I would take Arkansas, too.
Heavy.
Even though Arkansas, as we had mentioned before, not overly impressive against Missouri State. But the hope is they're just overlooking that opponent getting ready for A&M.
Will Rogers completed 38 and 39 passes in the first two games for Mississippi State and completed just 24 against LSU on the road in Death Valley. This was those games where I still feel the same way about LSU going into the game versus I mean, it's a nice win for them, but I felt like this was not in the same vein as Penn State, Chad, for Mississippi State, but maybe the same tier of expectation where if they go and win, to me, I'm buying more into, maybe this is a Mississippi State roster that is on par with where Arkansas would be in the West. And by losing this game on the road to LSU, which I think this is the easiest matchup if you're getting LSU this year, I don't think it gets easier down the road. I think this season may be the easiest you have it for a while because it's rare that you have seven wins as an expectation for a team in Baton Rouge. Point being, for Will Rogers to show up and play his worst game since 2020, that's a sign that Mississippi State may be a little bit better than last year, but not by much.
Yeah, I was really disappointed in Mississippi State watching a good bit of this game. I was impressed with Jaden Daniels. Not overly accurate, no. 22 for 37. 93 yards rushing, though. That's the thing that jumps out to me with him. He is exceptionally quick for a quarterback. I don't know that he's fast in terms of just running past people, but how quickly he makes his decision and, you know, explodes through the hole. I've been really impressed with his quickness. He looked a lot better in this game. Nice bounce back for LSU.
And State, by the way, led 13-0. And then they muffed the punt and they have the short field. They allow LSU back in it. But they never recovered from that when they gave up the lead.
To me, it's the big takeaway from Mike Leach's offense almost every year. He's never going to have the most talented team. And he's got a system that works. But when it doesn't work, when you can play the defense that you have to play against this air raid, and you have the athletes to do it, it can look really bad. And I feel like this was one of those games where they got into it, and defensively LSU had the right plan, and more importantly, they had the right personnel on defense to stop the air raid. And when that happens, there's no counter, right? That's the one knock on Mike Leach is, if they've got you, and they know how to play against all these crossers that are going over, then you're done. There's no real counter to that for Mike Leach's offense, and that's sort of what they got into in this game against LSU's defense.
And LSU, when you play them, the story on them this season, you can get out to a lead. They are extremely late starters when it comes to games. 34 of their 58 points in their two FBS games have been in the fourth quarter. And their final 25 plays against Mississippi State produced 24 points and 175 yards. Their first 50 plays, just 7 points. Seven points. So in keeping that in mind, if you're jumping out to the early lead, their defense eventually syncs up, and it's difficult. Their defense this past week was very good. But Mississippi State lacked that counterpunch after starting off strong. LSU had one. So credit them there. But I think I learned more about Mississippi State than I did LSU in that game. 31-16 the final when Mississippi State led 13-0 early. Arkansas survives. We'll get into that. Plus, Georgia dominates South Carolina. It's a little bit weird that after Georgia dominates you, that you're already fielding questions about whether or not the locker room is still with it, like if they're throwing in the towel. And I'm paraphrasing there, but for Shane Beamer to get that question when it
was... Do you sense any quit in your team?
Yeah, but it was Georgia. Like I said Friday, I felt like this game was going to be reminiscent of the early matchup last year when Georgia came on the road against Vandy. It's no knock on South Carolina or Vandy. It's just Georgia's that dominant, and they're not going to allow you any breathing room. And, I mean, I'm not surprised by this.
If they just lost to Louisiana Tech, I'd understand the question. It's weird after a beatdown. You're 1-2. Is your season over?
Yeah.
Has your team already quit? And I'm thinking, have you seen their schedule?
I didn't hear a lot of talk that South Carolina was ready to compete on this level.
Look, South Carolina has looked about like I expected, maybe slightly worse. But they were big underdogs in two of the games. They're 1-2. You know, it's gone according to script so far. There's nothing outstanding, good or bad,
right,
about their season so far that would prompt someone asking Shane Beamer if he senses quit in the locker room now that they're 1-2. Maybe this was the guy that voted them number one in the SEC, or one of those.
Oh, that's right. Maybe
one of those voters that
maybe
he had South Carolina ninth in the nation after that loss to Arkansas. So he's really upset now that they're 1-2.
They know the program better than we do, being like right there in the thick of it. It was just a very odd question to field at a press conference where the number one team and the most talented team in the country, without question, came in there and blew the doors off, and it was really no surprise that took place. We'll dive in more into that as the week progresses. When we come back, the game of the weekend happens in Knoxville. Tennessee hosts Florida in what has always been an anticipated matchup. And this one brings a lot more to the table. We'll give the early preview and our thoughts of the Vols and Gators next on Outkick 360. Outkick 360 rolls on. Coming up, we'll check in with PK in Buffalo. We have so much to get to throughout the show. We're going to recap the crazy weekend of the NFL coming up next hour as well. Plus, previewing both games tonight, Titans and Bills, Vikings and Eagles in a doubleheader where the Eagles and Vikings kick off in Philly, roughly halftime of game number one in Buffalo with the Bills and Titans. Chad, later this weekend, 2:30 Central, 3:30 Eastern, CBS kickoff, Tennessee and Florida, where the Vols at Neyland are currently at DraftKings, an 11-point favorite over the SEC's rival. And for those not familiar with this, go ahead and lay out the beware of big games where Tennessee's favored against Florida.
Well, Florida's won 16-17 in this series, and you hear that and think, okay, Urban Meyer was the coach at Florida for a while. They won two national titles. That makes sense because Tennessee's been pretty bad, mediocre for 15 years. Well, Tennessee lost to Jim McElwain as the coach, lost to Ron Zook as the coach, lost to Will Muschamp as the coach, did not beat Dan Mullen as head coach at Florida also. They've lost to some pretty average Florida teams. Now, watching these two teams play through three games, Tennessee's better. Tennessee's the better football team. Vegas has them as 11-point favorite because Tennessee is taking care of business. They go on the road and beat Pitt in a game. They don't play that well offensively. They destroy Ball State. They destroy another MAC team, 63-6 over Akron this weekend. Credit to Josh Heupel, because there's one thing about this Tennessee team, and you see it all over college football, teams getting scares from majorly inferior opponents. I had no concern of that against Akron. I knew Tennessee was going to show up and blow them out and pick their score in that game. That's a credit to Josh Heupel and the culture he has in Knoxville. Now, the big question mark is, will that culture lead to Tennessee shaking whatever spirit is within them, that when they see that orange helmet with the blue Gators printed on the helmet, that they play in fear and they make big mistakes and they don't perform up to expectation? That's a big step. I think it's a new day in Knoxville with Josh Heupel. But Hutton, we've seen multiple Tennessee coaches be in some pretty good spots in this rivalry and have their team show up and look bad against the Gators. Watching Florida Saturday night, Tennessee's a better team. Anthony Richardson has the ability to make big plays with his legs. Their passing offense, not quite there right now. Tennessee looks better. That's why they're an 11-point favorite. They just got to show up and do it.
I'm hesitant.
And prove they can do it against Florida.
I agree. They're better. I don't know if it's 11 points better in this game.
I would hammer Florida on the money line on that one.
And the idea... So, the teams that have performed well against Florida, Kentucky and then South Florida, were able to run the football. Tennessee can't run the football. That's number one.
Well, especially now that their starting running back may be out. He was out
even
after
with
second,
him,
second
Even with
game.
Him, yeah, I haven't carry. Seen enough. And when you so South Florida entered this past week as a 24.5-point underdog, and they had lost 19 of 23 games with head coach Jeff Scott there. And they punted one time because they ran the football. They converted 8 of 15 third downs, 2 for 2 on fourth down, and they ran for 286 yards on the Florida defense. That's how you beat them. That's the storyline of the week. Does Heupel beat them running their offense?
Cedric Tillman needs to be healthy, too.
Headlines and Buffalo next.